Representative Guerra, point of order. It's 9:38. Apologize for the delayed start. 28th of March, 2012. We're going to endeavor to deal with two bills today. We'll start with House Bill 59. I'd like to invite the sponsor up. We have members present. He's coming up here. Representative Newman, Representative Costello. Representative Dugan, I know, has been in here. Representative Chair Thomas Stoltz, Vice Chair Chair Clough, Representative Guerra, Representative Wilson, Representative Guttenberg, and Representative Jewell. So we actually have almost a full complement. Forum to do business. We have before us first House Bill 59. Welcome, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you hearing the bill today. The point of this legislation is to use the purchase of Alaska manufactured products for Alaska commercial fishing vessels. What this bill does is it offers a discount of 2% if a borrower through the product quality or the engine efficiency replacement programs borrows money from the revolving loan fund, and then at least 50% of that loan is involved in purchase of things that are manufactured in Alaska. And you've received some information from different manufacturers in Alaska that manufacture. Right now, what happens is if someone comes in for one of the loans that the state is putting forward, there is no incentive to buy from Alaska. It doesn't matter for your loan whether you buy something out of Seattle or off the East Coast, or whether you buy it from Alaska. And there's built into this section this 2% reduction in the interest rate are two criteria, provides flexibility for the department to do it only if it's advantageous and workable under the situation, and in no case can it be below 3%, because the 3% is where the Department of Commerce says the floor is for them to maintain their program without cost. So we're making sure that we don't get into a situation where we would actually be paying money. It's a interest rate reduction, but not to the point where we would actually be losing money. So that's we have the Department of Commerce on line to talk to you about that, as well as if you have questions about determining products built in Alaska. You've also got in the backup material the questions that were asked and the answers from the department of how they will assure that the products are manufactured in Alaska. There's a certification program already existing, Alaska manufactured preferences, and Alaska products. So those definitions are already in there. And so, Mr. Chairman, I know your time is very valuable, so I'd be happy to answer questions, or if you want more explanation, I can do that.
So I can see it's a good bill. It brought you and the Resource Development Council together.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes.
I'm working on that.
Yes. Keep working. Let's go. We have one person here for public testimony. I'm going to jump right in. That they'll probably answer some of the questions through that. But, Mr. Scholes and Homer, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Please proceed with your identify yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
I'd like to testify in support of.
Why don't you please identify yourself first for the record?
Oh, okay, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Scholes, and I operate a refrigeration business here in Alaska. I've been here for 30 years doing this, and before that I operated a business in the lower 48 for another 30 years. I'm over 80 years old. I've been in this business for over 50 years. What we have here in Alaska is we manufacture a seawater chiller, which is peculiar to Alaska's fishing industry. It's used nowhere else in the world, probably, due to the nature of this fishery. The manufacturing problems we have here are high insurance rates, we have excessive freight rates, we have higher labor rates. We have quite a bit of excess costs versus what we have down below when we were building them in the lower 48. It's kind of difficult for us to manufacture here in Alaska and compete with the lower 48. It's akin to someone lower in the lower 48 manufacturing trying to compete with a manufacturer in China. It simply isn't, we're not able to do it. So this House Bill 59 is a step in the right direction for Alaska manufacturers. It's perhaps not a great fix, but it is a step in the right direction, which will give some incentive to our industry, to those in our industry, buy in Alaska. We have been doing this, and we see all our money is going from Alaska down to Seattle. And again, I see it as just like Lower 48. We are doing the same thing in the Lower 48. The money go from the Lower 48 over to China. And in that, this is peculiar to Alaska. We should really be manufacturing it here, and that we have to service it here. So whatever you can do in that regard, this 2%, is definitely a step in the right direction with regard to our ability to produce a product and hire people here in Alaska. And that kind of sums up what I have to say, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and I'm sure on a slower day, Representative Newman would talk refrigeration with you because that's one of his skill sets. I saw. Cool to the subject today. Not too bad for finance humor. Thank you very much, Mr. Scholes. Didn't see any questions. Is there anybody else wishing to testify on the bill out in the vast lands beyond Juneau? Hearing none. Anybody here in Juneau that wish to testify other than departments will come to you for technical questions. We'll go ahead and close public testimony and proceed on with the bill.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to note that you have in your backup materials Alaska Diesel Electric, which actually manufactures generators, electric generators in Anchorage, and those would be also advantaged, as well as we have numerous welding shops that create some of the products that would be utilized under this section, as well as Northern Marine Canvas product, which makes the slush bags for ice chilling and the Braylon bags, and they are there's also information on their products as well. So
I'm not sure if that's coming. I think one of my high school friends works there. Was there any, did you wish the department to add anything to this testimony? Were there any wishes from the members? Representative Thomas.
Thank you. Representative Seaton, does this include boats? I was thinking a couple weeks ago, how do we get people to quit buying boats built in Anacortes, Bellingham, LeConnor? And I was thinking, we've got a shipyard here, and I think Woody, or I can't remember the guy who's from Petersburg, is building 160-some a vessel down there, and we have small boat builders in Homer, Cordova, several places build Setnet skiffs or gillnet boats. And would this include, or can we include, commercial vessels? I mean, that's the one I think that, you know, when fishermen brag about buying 50 boats a year, that would probably keep people, you know, a fleet of people, even if they're fiberglass boats like the ones the Russians build out of your district there. We should put them in there so that, you know, this would be a year-round industry and year-round work for people. And I don't know if it includes them or not.
Representative Thomas, through the chair, this bill works on the two things, the product quality and the energy efficiency upgrades, so it does not include the large vessel purchases.
if we headed that way, there's boat manufacturers in Chugiak and the Mat-Su Valley, and it's not just commercial, and it's a big cottage industry.
Right, and they can build up bigger boats, though. And I don't know where the loan bill is. I'm co-chair on the sport charter halibut boats, but that's another industry. I mean, you know, why buy a boat in Washington? I was trying to figure out how to get them to build them up here.
And through the chair, Representative Thomas, I believe that the sport charter provision and the mariculture, this same provision was added on to House Bill 121, which passed through House Finance earlier. So it did apply to those.
Right, but I'm just saying, you know, maybe I'm grasping or enough to redo it for next year, but Woody Winters is the one that guy is looking from Petersburg that's building this big Bering Sea fishing boat and a brand new one. You know, we need it. That's what we need, creating jobs year-round up here. Next time, I guess.
Thank you, Representative Guerra, and then Fairclough.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. I appreciate the bill. The loan discount doesn't get added to the loan discount that we passed for the energy efficiency upgrades or the fuel efficiency upgrades, that bill we passed last year, right? They're not cumulative, or are they cumulative?
The 2%, through the chair, the 2% is a difference if it's manufactured in Alaska versus manufactured outside Alaska. So the 2% couldn't go below 3%. So it couldn't be a loss. The question is whether we want to incentivize jobs in Alaska. That's the purpose of this bill, is to get economic development and jobs here. And so the 2%, you know, you talk with the department. They're online. I think it's Winnetta Ayers is online to answer the specific questions.
Representative Guerra.
Sure, I'm just curious whether the loan discounts are cumulative. The bill we passed last session, I think, that gave you a loan discount for upgrading the energy efficiency of
the last legislature, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2 years ago. Energy efficiency of your boat engines, things like that. Is it cumulative on top of that? And not a big concern, I was just curious.
Ms. Ayers, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Did you hear the question?
Yes, sir, I did. Representative Garrett, through the chair, I believe your question was, would the interest rate reduction be cumulative? And the answer would be no, because that would put us well below prime. And I believe elsewhere in statute it's clear that we cannot go below that. With the engine efficiency, that is one of the engine efficiency and product quality improvement is already established at a below market rate, so this would not be cumulative upon that below market rate.
Thank you.
And that was Juanita Ayers from Anchorage, Director of Economic Development within Department of Commerce and Economic Development and Community and Regional Affairs, and a bunch of them, for the record. Since you forgot to announce that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Fairclough. And then Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, I see on the Commercial Fishing Fund loan website, it says that the terms and the conditions of the loans, and then it says the interest rate is 2% above the prime rate, which is in statute, and it says is not to exceed 10.5%, which is in state statute, not less than 3%, and I don't see that in state statute. Is that a regulation, or is it somewhere else in state statute?
Could we go to Ms. Ayers?
Ms. Ayers, are you still there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Did you again hear the question?
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fairclough, through the chair, I believe that it is in both referenced in both. I'm sorry. With regard to commercial fishing, a floor is not established, but it is referenced in regulation.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just pointing that we're guaranteed by regulation that the amount won't be below prime, but it's not laid out in state statute. I have a question on page 1, lines 11 and 12. It says let's go start at 10. When the department offers a reduction under this subsection, the department shall provide a reduction to all loan applicants who meet the criterion description in this subsection. So what I want to know is I'm looking at, I believe, 1,566 loans that are out there, and does that mean that whether they do anything or not, once one loan is given, that we go back and reduce the rate on all loans that we're currently carrying?
Through the chair, Representative Faircloth, when we went through this with the Department of Commerce, what we were doing was making sure that the loans weren't done inequitably for one part of the state versus another part of the state. So if someone was applying for a loan, that you wouldn't preferentially give this to someone in Cook Inlet and not give it to the people in Bristol Bay if they all met the criteria and applied for the loan. So there's nothing in this that was intended at all to go back and renegotiate loans or anything like that. This was simply to make sure that all fisheries that were getting the product quality upgrades, if the department felt that they could give this at the time, that's why it's May on line 7, because it's not going below cost. That they would give it to everybody that was applying and met the criteria could qualify at the same time. So there had been a question raised about whether this could be given preferentially to certain sectors versus other sectors that would also qualify for the same, under the same qualifications.
Ms. Harris, Representative Fairclough has a question for you specifically.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if it's Ms. Ayers or if it's the Department of Law. It says the department shall provide the reduction to all loan applicants. So it depends on the point of time whether it's the new applicants or if it's the old applicants or if it's both. And so just the use of shall, I'm in support of providing this economic benefit to our fishing fleet and to try to provide jobs for Alaskans, but I don't want it to be misinterpreted that we're going back on 1,566 loans, and if they qualify, that now we're going to reduce their rate. Or if we are, I just want to know that up front and then know the financial implications to the state in doing so.
Ms. Harris, did you hear the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Faircloth, the chair. This particular bill, HB 59, would not apply to all loans under the portfolio, only those that have been executed under the eligible purposes for product quality improvement or engine efficiency, engine efficiency in the last year, historically it's been about 5% of the portfolio. In the last year it was about 11%. And I would have to go back and find you the information on product quality, but not all of our active accounts would be applicable under this, the provisions of HB 59. Additionally, I think I understand your point. I think it probably does require some clarification from law, but there would be also consideration from the borrowers about and we would certainly want to consider what the impact might be if we were having to refinance all of those loans that had been previously written under these two eligible purposes.
Mr. Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if the sponsor would consider on line 12 the reduction to all new loan applicants. Does that get to the intent of what we're wanting to do? I don't want to do it on the fly if it's somehow hurting. Hurting the bill.
Fairclough, that's absolutely the intent, and that would be a very friendly amendment.
We'll hold that. Why don't you write that one out, and we'll come to that as we close out.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll pass for right now.
Representative Costello.
Thank you, through the chair. My question has to do with the reduction that borrowers are allowed if they pay on time. Is that something, and this might be for Ms. Ayers, but is that something that applies for all the loans in the department or just this one?
Thank you, Representative Costello, through the chair. The pay on time provision is provided for those borrowers that after 1 year of on time payment can receive an interest rate reduction. That has been available for all purposes under the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund.
Ms. Ayers, does the reduction continue even if future payments are not made on time?
Representative Costello, through the chair, we do rescind that if a borrower falls into delinquency or default.
And through the chair, Representative Seaton, and do you know if that 3% floor can go lower through the on-time payment reduction?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, the reason on line 7 it's May is so that we do not get into a situation where we would be in a deficit situation, in other words, costing the state time.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, why don't we go to the fiscal notes while we're waiting for Richard Fairfoot on her amendment. She's drawing the amendment, so I guess we'll just delay that. It looks like we have zero fiscal notes. The department doesn't anticipate a significant impact on the bill from the bill. Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, how can it have a zero fiscal note if we anticipate that there are going to be credits against taxes?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dugan, yeah, we're not providing any credits against taxes. What it is simply a percentage reduction in the interest rate on loans. And the reason on line 7 is so that that it's May, that's if it's financially available and it is not going to run into a deficit situation. So there's no intention in the bill of the interest rate reduction on a loan. There's no credits on taxes here. This is simply the borrower borrowing money, and then what the interest rate on the repayment of that loan is cannot be below the rate at which the revolving loan fund needs to substantiate and maintain its loan portfolio. But there's no tax credits at all in this bill. It's simply an interest payment rate reduction on money that's borrowed if 50% at least of that is Alaska manufactured products.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the state's going to get less money in certain circumstances. Is that correct?
It's a revolving loan fund.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, yes, we have a revolving loan fund that loans out money, and depending upon what interest rate is charged, they will make less money. They would not be in a situation in which they were actually creating a deficit.
So you're not asking us to capitalize this fund or anything like that.
That's correct.
Right, Mr. Chairman, but it's cutting the income. So that money isn't just going to vanish. It's not going to come into the state because the rate's going to be reduced, which means that the payer is going to get a tax or whatever you would call it break, and the result is that the loan fund is going to get less money. Am I not understanding that correctly?
I can't ask. I assume you may. That's a subjective question to ask, Representative Seaton. Yeah. But your level of understanding.
I understand that.
I should. Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Through the chair, Representative Dugan, the interest rates that are charged on the revolving loan fund maintain the revolving loan fund. There is, you know, a question as to whether we want to use incentives in the borrowing of money by Alaska commercial fishermen to incentivize jobs and Alaska manufactured products, and that's what this is to do. But in no case would it be anticipated that the interest rate reduction would actually reduce the principal of the revolving loan fund or the payments to the revolving loan fund that wouldn't maintain that fund.
I hope this becomes a problem that we have to address. That's Representative Wilson and then Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's kind of where Representative Dugan was going. Do we know how many, and I know this is for just new loans, but do we know from past loans how many would have qualified for this reduction and whether or not we're going to have less money to loan those out there? I think that's what Representative Dugan was trying to get to, is that could we have a negative impact because there might not be as much money in the fund? Because I like the incentive part of making sure they're Alaskans, and that'd be nice that would even be a qualification. But do we know if it's going to have a large impact on how much money would be able to be utilized for future loans?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think you have a sheet, a backup sheet from the Division of Economic Development, Department of Commerce there, which is showing that in all of the years from 1999 through 2011, giving the product quality improvement loans, and the average is averaging about $891,000 a year for that, and for the engine efficiency upgrades, it the total averaged $564,000 per year from 2009, and that became available through 2011. So we're talking about an interest rate reduction of 2% on repayment, on an annual repayment of those loans. But this is not the amount of the interest. This is the amount of the total loans.
Yeah. Representative Edgman.
Was there somebody online who wanted to?
Pardon?
Was there somebody online who wanted to add to that?
I don't know. Is there somebody at...
Mr. Chairman,
please go ahead.
If I could add a point of clarification,
please.
With regard to the two eligible purposes that are applicable under HB 59, product quality improvement and engine efficiency. For example, in the last fiscal year, it would have applied to between 60 to 55 loans overall. Under the provisions in the Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund now, for those two eligible purposes, the interest rate is established at prime minus 2, but not less than 3%. As I understand HB 59, what this gives the department the permission to do is under the circumstances described where a loan is presented and 50% or more of the work will be done with an Alaska manufacturer, it is permissive that we may consider an interest rate reduction, for example, under the current circumstances with prime at 3.25, interest rate in crawfish is 5% because we only adjust it in half point percentages. So right now we can go down to 3% if adjusted quarterly, depending on where prime is. Under the circumstances, if a loan is presented, we maybe could consider somewhere between a half point adjustment. Under current circumstances, we do expect that as initially the opportunity and the circumstances to apply this may be quite limited, but as interest rates adjust upward, then that would give us more flexibility to incentivize this work.
Okay. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having had a bill that addressed this very subject not too long ago, I've got some familiarity with it. A couple of comments. One, I think in fairness, the fiscal note should address the impact on the fund itself. It's an $80 million plus commercial fishing revolving loan fund. These loans are going to be small. You've got to be an Alaskan fisherman for 2 out of 5 years, so it's going to allow most long-term fishermen to be able to participate, but there's going to be some who haven't met those initial requirements to get into the loan program. Keep in mind, these are smaller loans, so a lot of fishermen are just going to pay these out of pocket to some extent. Some will probably go through this loan program if it's a wintertime project or what have you. So the demand overall, and this is a good bill, is probably fairly negligible, but to be consistent with the fiscal note that I had from my earlier bill that just passed out this committee, I had that all spelled out. It doesn't spell out in this fiscal note that there is going to be some demand or some cost to the interest earning ability of the portfolio, because you're delving into loans that are 2% below prime in some cases. So obviously there's going to be a cost involved in that. And that was very, very clearly spelled out in House Bill 261, my bill that passed to this committee about a week ago or so. In its earlier iteration, it had this low interest rate component to it, and we got hit pretty hard with a fiscal note and a bunch of narrative that explained it, which I think this fiscal note on a good bill that we have here in front of us should probably spell out as well, because I hear confusion from committee members.
If there's a trust from the Finance Committee, I'd like to adopt the fiscal note with give me the latitude to prepare a fiscal note that will reflect that. We'll use the narrative from the other bill. We'll prepare a House Finance Committee fiscal note. Representative Guttenberg?
I'm in agreement with that, Mr. Chairman. I want to address another.
We will, Mr. Michelle, you have that? And look at, was it House Bill 261?
Thank you, and it's to Ms. Ayers. Ms. Ayers, on this loan fund, how much pressure is on the fund, and how many different programs are that have reduced interest rates? Just, are you concerned that overall, or at some point, we're going to come to a point where the health of the fund is in danger?
Representative Guttenberg, to the chair. As I indicated, our belief at this point is that the opportunity to use this with prime at such a low level is going to be negligible in at least the next 2 years. If we were to project beyond that as to where prime might be and what a half point percentage interest might be on 50 to 60 loans a year, we can provide that information. Certainly when we look at the circumstances now, and this is not additive to the prime minus 2 because of how close prime is to the 3% floor at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ayers, what's the average percentage rate of the 1,500 loans or 1,500 plus loans that you have there? Do you have an average that we know we're getting a rate of return with?
Representative Fairclough, through the chair, I would have to calculate that for you and get you an effective rate. Again, for most eligible purposes under Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund, interest currently is 5.5%.
Thank you. And am I reading, Ms. Ayers, the information when I'm reading number of other accounts under statistics for loan servicing, is that individuals then that qualify for loans?
Representative Faircloth, through the chair. Other accounts is composed of a number of different accounts that sometimes we have accounts that had previously been authorized but are no longer active, but we still have loans that are paying out under those funds, so those have been moved into other accounts. We have other accounts that we administer for other departments, and those are accounted for the fire time and servicing from our division, but it's not necessarily a core service for our division purpose and mission.
Do we do you see refinancing happening in this loan program?
Representative Faircloth, through the chair, is your question regarding refinancing for the possible interest rate reduction in the product quality and engine efficiency, or just overall?
It's both. I'm wondering first if you allow it overall, and then if you do, if there's a cost associated with that, then maybe I don't want to offer the amendment that's new, because then you're just going to, we're going to be extracting money from people that we're trying to save money with. So I'm just wondering what that looks like.
Thank you, Representative Faircloth, through the chair also. Well, currently, for all of our outstanding loans, refinancing loans are 16% of the portfolio. In the past year, refinancing accounted for about 10% of our overall portfolio. Again, I believe that under the current conditions, with prime at a historic low level, that we would not see refinancing activity under the provisions of 1859. And I will have to verify some other information about the refinance option. But historically, that was adopted at a time when there were very trying economic circumstances in commercial fishing. And that was a combination of both borrowers in our portfolio and out in the private sector that were severely devalued because of the devaluation of the salmon run.
Mr. Chairman, with that said, I ask the, with your permission, I ask the clerk to pass out amendment number one.
Okay, is that prepared? Just stand in a restful, non-at-ease here. It's fairly simple. Once you talk about it while it's being distributed, Mr. Fairfax.
Mr. Chairman, amendment.
Move it and then talk.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
I'll check so everybody gets a chance to read it. The one word.
Mr. Chairman, amendment number one affects section 1, line 12. After the words, the reduction to all, insert the word new in EW.
Does everybody have the amendment? Is there any, I'll remove my objection. Is there any objection to the amendment or any other discussions? Hearing none, the amendment number one submitted is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, my only other concern is that I'd like the citation where the 3% is in state statute. I believe it's in regulation, and I understand why that flexibility is desired, but would just like to clearly state for a future record that it's my expectation that we weren't offering loans that were costing the state money, and that that threshold currently is set at 3% for a loan rate to be able to cover those costs that the states are incurring to be able to provide that service to our clients.
I'd like to be able to pass the bill out. We've had some latitude on the fiscal note and waiting for that, and we didn't have one of those refrains about we don't expect to pass this bill out today. We will wait on that. We'll let the bill go if that's the will of the committee, with the understanding we're going to revise the fiscal note, and Ms. Ayers, I'm sure, is working to provide the same type of narrative language as she did for Senate Bill or House Bill 261, and which which is fairly detailed in the analysis about the projected change in the loan portfolio with specific numbers and so forth. So we will. Well, we won't transmit this to the floor today. We'll wait until that all is together. I don't think that's going to slow it down too much, but I want to make sure everything's together. And if you can bring that citation for the floor discussion. Representative Fairbrook?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dugan?
If I might, this may not be exactly the right bill to bring this to the committee's attention, but I'm going to do it anyway. I just had some numbers run in terms of what we're doing in terms of tax credits and legislation that would basically create tax credits. And it goes like this, if I might, Mr. Chairman. We have basically 15 relatively big loan programs that we're running. About 10 of them are for oil tax legislation. And then there's the film credit and the community development quota credit and those. And I'm not really sure. I'm not a fisherman, so I haven't really gone through to see how many more of those there might be. And then as nearly as my aid was supposed, it was able to divine, we've got 26 tax credit pieces of 26 pieces of tax credit legislation that are before one or the other of the bodies. You know, this one might not cost very much, but it's going to cost something. I don't care how you run those numbers. The others cost a lot. I mean, some of them cost quite a bit. And all I wanted to do is to say to the committee that we've got to get, I can't speak for the rest of the committee, but I've got to get a better handle on what we're doing here. Because we pass these things one by one, and we haven't run the totals, and we're basically tax crediting ourselves into the middle of next week. I'm not particularly concerned with this piece of legislation. I'm going to let it go. But I'm afraid that the committee is going to have to listen to me say this every time from now on that we do something like this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to let it go. If I didn't get to pass commercial fishing bills, I wouldn't get to pass any fishing bills. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. I'm going to vote for this bill, A, because I like it, and B, because I want to confuse the Resource Development Council a little bit. So, I'm sorry, Representative Seaton, you got caught in that crosshairs, but Representative Dugan is right. Your bill is not a big part of the sort of tax credit issue. And I would just remind people, so my good friend Mike Kelly, and Mike and I got along really well, he had a bill that I didn't necessarily agree with on that one. But when he did his tax credit, it wasn't a tax credit that lasted forever. It was a tax credit that lasted long enough to get the companies on their feet. You know, it was a couple-year tax credit, right? And if we're going to consider tax credits, I'm far afield. I hope we'll consider approaches like that that don't always drain the state treasury, because I think we all agree we are facing possibly declining revenue in coming years. But with that, Representative Seaton, your bill's not a big part of that problem. So,
and given it's not a tax credit bill, but we have wide latitude for general discussion. Motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 5927-LS0317/A from committee with amended fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Is there any objection?
Mr. Chairman, as amended.
With that, I hope everybody's fish board appointments come up. Remember the goodwill toward this industry. With that, the bill's passed out. Well, we're going to invite Representative Jewell's staff up, and Representative Jewell, if you wish, or however you wish. Thank you, Representative Seaton. I know if we wait too long, Brody might have spilled something on his nice clothes there.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, speaking from experience, individual. Yeah, we have a, at the very least, we wanted to bring the, everybody's had the fiscal, had the new CS, not at least since yesterday, even if it, you had some time during 19 amendments to at least glance at it. So, Representative Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I've moved before the committee.
Chairman.
Okay. I want to make sure I have the, Brody, is it Y? Is that the right one?
Because we like it.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill number 258, Finance 27-LS0400/Y, Nauman 327-12.
I like him better as Mr. Shaman.
is there any objection? This is a working document. Okay. It is adopted as a working document. We'll go until they drag us out of here, Brody, or Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is Brody Anderson, legislative aide to Representative Reggie Jewell. Before you today is a new version of the naturally occurring asbestos bill, and I'd like to walk through the changes for the committee. The first major change, substantive change to the bill is on page 6, lines 10 through 31, continuing on to page 7, lines 1 through 39. And what this does is this creates a NOAA delineation zone. And that was the main concern for changing the structure of the bill in this way is basically the local opt-in ability. And so now the way the bill is structured is a community would step forward through a municipality or a community based on what form of government is available, municipal government. We tried to use Title 29 and the revenue sharing language to craft this portion of the section of the bill to recognize municipal governments, and then when they're not available, community governments that don't fall under Title 29. The community would step forward providing testing results for gravel pits and public input as well, showing and expressing the need that they have.
Mr. Anderson, just for clarification, when you say no, I don't want to be confused with a federal agency. It's naturally occurring asbestos,
correct? That is correct, John. Okay. Thank you. So the community steps forward to express the desire to have this delineation zone created. They turn over their information, testing results, resolutions, if they have them from the municipal governments. The state then takes a look at the testing results, takes a look at the information provided. The state does have the ability to go back and request further information from the communities. They also then can go back and go in, and then after they've verified that, yes, this is their final option, they don't have any other ability but really to start considering the use of naturally occurring asbestos gravel, they could create this delineation zone. The only other part of this section also is when there's not a community or a municipality in the area and the state needs to create a naturally occurring asbestos delineation zone for themselves, they have that ability as well. Examples are up and down the Dalton, there are certain places, things like that. So once the delineation zone...
We're going to let you keep going there with questions, but we want you to be able to get through your presentation.
Once the delineation zone is created, at that point, the rest of the bill then applies. And I've kind of created a flow chart, artistic as it may not be, to help kind of show how the delineation zone and what goes on within the delineation zone. The next major change then comes on page 8, lines 20 through 22. And this is just an expansion on the site-specific plan. This is just an expansion of more of a public health concern to really identify not only what airborne asbestos can become airborne, but also taking into consideration vehicle and the impacts of vehicle impacts on creating airborne asbestos. And that was a suggestion through one of the committee members as well. The next change then also begins we rewrote a lot of the sections and the regulations starting on page 10, going through page 11, and then on page 12, lines 1 through 12. The major changes there are on page 12, lines 2 through 12. Subsection 7, 8, and 9 are expressed guidelines on creating, there was discussion in the committee on economically reasonable. Through conversations we had with DOT, expressing, actually trying to come up with a definition of economically reasonable is difficult at a statute level. And so these are guidelines. This is for the regulation writing that they truly express how they come to terms with what is and what is not economically reasonable. That's 7 through 10. And then the last point is 10 is additional guidelines for expressing public health concerns with airborne asbestos fibers. The final two changes are on that page as well. Lines 17 through 22, we expanded the definition of naturally occurring asbestos to include the types of asbestos, which was a concern for the committee. And then also the final change is on lines 27 through 31, which allows for the one regional area that does desire for this to happen is Ambler and the community up there. And this would allow them to be put on a provisional NOAA delineation zone while we write the regulations so they can move forward on their projects. And those are the changes that we're sharing.
Okay, with the limitations, we're going to quit at 10:35. We'll go through any questions. We have Representative Wilson, and then Dugan, and then Guerra, but we'll stop at 10:35.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on the delineation zones. You don't think we're going to get into a problem where this may cost the community a lot of money because of the different testing or delay their project because of this additional part, or are you working that out with the department?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we are working that out. They definitely, the application process will be done through regulations, and cost to the community will be a consideration for how much the state does versus the community.
Thank you.
Last shot, Representative Garrett. I mean, Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, I
may have eyes from both sides.
I'm inclined to make Mr. Anderson explain this flowchart, but I won't in the interest of time. Thank you.
Can you do it in a minute, Representative Garrett?
Yes. Number one, if I could hear from DOT at some point this afternoon just about whether there are other options to get them gravel. Number two, Verde, I think you may have actually addressed one of my concerns on page 12. It says, essentially, it seems to say you only use naturally occurring asbestos if other options are economically unreasonable. I guess when you get back, I'd like you to explain that to me more, and maybe that just gets rid of one of my amendments, if it does what I hope it does.
I can't promise this afternoon because we are in the process of trying to fit bills in as we can, and that's
sure.
So
but, I appreciate you doing that one. Thanks.
So we will set this aside. We'll give you a closing, Mr. Ruffin-Gill.
Other than Mr. Chairman, you know, as many bills come before this committee and aren't quite ready for prime time, when we hear the concerns of committees, it allows us ability to focus and zero in and get creative juices flowing, and this has been the result. And we thank people for their input.
We made it to 10:35, exactly. So we will stand in adjournment until 1:30 to proceed with our education seminar.